the insistence on imagining ourselves as a part of larger movements, a world, a planetary concerns, which means that we also have to take into consideration what is happening to the environment of the world. So I, I'm hoping that in our campaigns, our local campaigns, such as what is happening in Chicago right now, we don't lose sight of the fact that we are a part of a larger context, a planet that will have no future if we are not successful in some of these radical democratic struggles.
Well, Angela Davis, we want to thank you so much for being with us. World-renowned abolitionist, author, activist, distinguished professor emerita at University of California, Santa Cruz, author of many books, including a new updated edition of her autobiography, Angela Davis. Tonight, Angela Davis will be giving the keynote address at the Audubon Ballroom, which is now the Shabazz Center. DemocracyNow.org will be linking to that YouTube stream. Ben Crump will also be speaking. I will be saying a few words. And Malcolm X's daughter will be introducing and giving a keynote as well, Dr. Ilyasa Shabazz. So go to democracynow.org for the details. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2 Special Programming Campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing to you in February and March at kboo.fm/thrills. Help us reach our goal of $17,000 by March 25th. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text us. Type in KBOO to the number 44321. For the thrill of it all, keep listening.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Russia ends participation in the last nuclear arms treaty with the U.S. Wintry weather promises a cold week for Oregon and southwestern Washington. And a new report shows heart-related deaths spiked in the first year of the pandemic. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, February 21st, 2023. I'm Eric Leuschner. Russian President Vladimir Putin suspends his country's participation in the only remaining nuclear arms control pact with the United States. He announced the news today, also reinforcing that his plans do not involve changing Russia's strategy in the war in Ukraine. Putin said Russia and Ukraine are victims of Western double-dealing in a long-delayed State of the Nation address. He added it is Russia, not Ukraine, fighting for its very existence. 3 days before the one-year anniversary of the war, Putin said, quote, We aren't fighting the Ukrainian people. The Ukrainian people have become hostages of the Kiev regime and Western masters, which have effectively occupied the country." End quote. The speech repeated a number of grievances the Russian leader has often noted as justification for the internationally condemned military campaign. Putin also declared that Moscow would suspend its participation in the New START Treaty. That pact was signed in 2010 by the U.S. and Russia. It caps the number of long-range nuclear warheads that the two sides can deploy and limits the use of missiles that can carry atomic weapons. Putin added, "Russia should stand ready to resume nuclear weapon testing if the U.S. does so." That move would end a global ban on such tests that have been in place since the Cold War. The U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken described Moscow's decision as, quote, "really unfortunate and very irresponsible," end quote. Putin said the West has the goal of inflicting a strategic defeat on Russia. He said their plans are to transform the local conflict into a global confrontation. He added that Russia was prepared to respond to what he deemed a matter of his country's existence. Putin denied any wrongdoing in invading Ukraine, even as Russia continues to strike civilian targets, including hospitals. Finally, he accused the West of targeting Russian culture, religion, and values because they cannot defeat Russia on the battleground. He said Western sanctions have no effect and that they had not achieved anything. Today, President Joe Biden delivered a major speech. He vowed to continue supporting Ukraine and repeatedly denounced Russian President Vladimir Putin, often by name. The president accused Putin of atrocities and said his attempt to subjugate a sovereign nation would not succeed. Biden's speech came hours after Putin addressed the Russian Federal Assembly, again claiming that Ukraine and its allies in the West started the war. Putin did not name Biden once in his lengthy address. Biden said the challenges of the invasion extend beyond Ukraine's borders. He said, quote, "When Russia invaded, it was not just Ukraine being tested. The whole world faced a test for the ages. Europe was being tested, America was being tested, NATO was being tested," end quote. Biden reiterated his support for Ukraine, Poland, and other Eastern European allies. He recently announced there will be new sanctions on Russia and talked about unveiling another major security assistance package. That comes on top of the tens of billions already committed this year. The United States and other Western nations have been shipping many arms, tanks, and ammunition to Ukraine, plus new vehicles, longer-range missiles, and Patriot air defense systems. U.S. officials said they hope the massive influx of weaponry to Ukraine can help Ukraine prevail and will put it in a stronger position to negotiate an end to the war. Speaking to reporters ahead of Biden's speech, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said it was not planned as a direct rebuttal to Putin. President Biden pledges more Ukraine support. The Supreme Court could change internet law, and Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene wants a national divorce of liberal and conservative states, drawing the ire of GOP leaders. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Remind us that freedom is priceless. It's worth fighting for, for as long as it takes, and that's how long we're going to be with you, Mr. President, for as long as it takes.
President Biden was in Kyiv on Monday, marking the near one-year anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Biden said his administration would continue to send aid to Ukrainian forces. Another round of more than $500 million will begin soon. While relations between the U.S. and China weaken, China is now considering offering military aid to Moscow. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky suggested a world war could happen if China supports Russia. Back at home, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Tennessee Representative David Kustoff are criticizing the Biden administration's decision to continue aiding Ukraine.
There's going to be tremendous pushback, both, I think, from the House and from the Senate, about additional expenditures for the Ukrainian effort.
Today, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in Gonzalez v. Google, what some are calling a landmark case that could bring serious changes and implications for internet law. The case argues tech companies should be legally responsible for the harmful content their algorithms promote. The case comes from a 2015 incident in which an ISIS gunman opened fire at a restaurant in Paris, killing Noemi Gonzalez, a U.S. exchange student. Utah Republican Governor Spencer Cox fired back at Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who called for a national divorce among Republican and Democratic states, adding the lawmaker's tweet was evil.
We have to unify, and it's very important for us to do that because we have to prove to the American people that the Republican Party is the party that they can trust.
Greene has suggested a national divorce and shrinking the federal government before. Governor Cox countered the argument by tweeting he thought the United States needs marriage counseling and argued healthy conflict is a part of the nation's foundation. In an interview, New York Representative George Santos admitted to fabricating parts of his professional background and said he didn't think people would find out because he got away with them during his unsuccessful campaign in 2020.
Well, I've been a terrible liar on those subjects.
House Homeland Security Committee Chair Benny Thompson says House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has posed a potential security risk by giving Fox News' Tucker Carlson thousands of hours of riot footage from January 6th. Finally, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas says he will not be pushed out of his position as some GOP leaders pursue impeachment and argue Mayorkas isn't doing enough to secure the border. Mayorkas calls the move a political stunt motivated by disagreement over policy. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our ATRUST indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Oregon and Southwest Washington can expect serious winter weather this week. The Cascades and the Oregon Coast Range are expecting snowfall, and the National Weather Service has issued a winter weather warning. Wind gusts are a big factor, too. Gusts up to 45 miles an hour have been forecasted starting this evening. Portland and Salem could see snow on the ground by Wednesday morning, according to some estimates. It's not clear yet from weather models which areas will get snow or when. Thursday, temperatures will drop into the low 20s. Portland has potential to break a record for the coldest daytime temperatures on Thursday and Friday. Cold weather all week means if lower areas on the I-5 corridor do see snow, it will be sticking around for a while. Elsewhere in the U.S., the upper Midwest is expecting a massive winter storm and serious snowfall. That storm has also the potential to spread an icy mix of showers from Nebraska to the New England coast. Folks can also expect travel disruptions thanks to a blanket of snow in the middle of the country on top of the winter storm warnings in our own neck of the woods. Oregon passed its landmark Death with Dignity Act back in 1997. That allowed terminally ill patients to end their own lives by self-administering a lethal dose of medication prescribed by a doctor. Now residents in Montana are facing the issue of medical aid in dying. A bill in the state legislature would make it a crime for doctors to prescribe the medication and charge them with murder. Eric Tegedoff reports.
A poll shows Montanans support medical aid in dying in large numbers. Under Senate Bill 210 in Helena, physicians could be charged with homicide if they write a prescription for a patient who requests this legal option. According to the poll, 88% of Montanans oppose the legislation. Leslie Mutchler is the daughter of Bob Baxter, whose case at the state Supreme Court opened up this option. In 2017, her son was diagnosed with terminal pancreatic cancer, and she says it was a blessing for him to have this medical choice.
We were able to gather the family together and say our goodbyes, and he could lay down in bed and take the medication, go to sleep, and just not wake up. And so he got to choose when he felt like his disease was the point he couldn't take it anymore.
The Senate is voting on the legislation today at 1 p.m., Opponents of the practice question the process of deciding the competency of people who are making end-of-life decisions. Some also oppose it because of their religious views. The poll found 75% of Montanans believe people who are of sound mind should have medical aid in dying as a legal option. Jim Nelson is a former Montana Supreme Court justice who sided with the majority in the Baxter decision that allowed medical aid in dying in 2009. He says this poll is clear evidence that the people of the state don't want this choice taken away.
I'm hoping that there are enough Republican legislators and Democratic legislators that will take this survey into consideration and that they will start representing all of Montanans that want this ability to seek, receive, and use medical aid in dying.
Muchler says the pain was so great for her son that he discussed doing something rash to end his life. But she says he had a different mindset once he received his end-of-life prescription.
He didn't have that urgency to do himself in, and he waited until February 19th before he took it. So I feel like we got to have an extra 2.5 months with him because he didn't have that pressure, I've got to do something right now. You know, he could think about it.
For Big Sky Connection, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Americans with Disabilities Act website has been upgraded to make it more accessible for people such as those who have low vision. It also uses more plain, straightforward language. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
A revamped website for the Americans with Disabilities Act has launched to make the site more accessible. The Justice Department has updated ADA.gov to provide more straightforward information on the rights of people with disabilities. It also is more accessible for people with low vision who use screen readers to navigate the internet, such as Heidi von Ravensburg with the University of Oregon's Center on Human Development. She says the use of heading tags helps the site, noting that a website without proper heading tags is like an elevator without buttons that stops on every floor.
If you're only going to the second or third floor, that may not be terribly inconvenient. But if you have to go to the 23rd floor, the 57th floor, the 83rd floor, you can see how you'd probably want to give up before dealing with that.
Von Ravensburg says the website used to be heavy on legal language, which included citations that are hard for someone with a screen reader to look through. The website includes guidance on a range of topics, from service animals to polling places. Head of the Northwest ADA Center, Katie Warden, says many people don't know their rights. She says having a website that uses clear-cut language will help it reach a greater number of people.
Using shorter sentences, not using technical legal terms, and then including lots of examples. And so that's a way to make things accessible for people who might have intellectual or developmental disabilities or other kinds of cognitive impairments.
Von Ravensburg says the update is exciting.
ADA.gov has done a really good job of being an example to other businesses, local and state governments, on what they can do to make their websites more accessible, using that plain language and also using those heading tags.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this forecast for a special rebroadcast of our interview with the Portland Psychedelic Society on the state of psilocybin legalization in Oregon. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, For the Wild. Tonight's weather will be cloudy and cold, reaching 36 degrees overnight. Early tomorrow morning, there's a chance of snow. Later in the day tomorrow, the Portland Metro has a higher chance of snow and a daytime high of 39 degrees. Today in history, in 1915, Claudia Jones was born in Trinidad and Tobago. Jones was a journalist and activist, supporting causes of communism, feminism, and black nationalism. She immigrated to the U.S. with her family as a child, but was later deported during political persecution of communists. She went to live in the United Kingdom and helped found Britain's first major black newspaper, the West Indian Gazette, in 1958. The quote of the day is from Jones, who said, quote, "A people's art is the genesis of their freedom," end quote. National Congress of American Indians President Fawn Sharp gives the State of Indian Nations address in Washington, D.C. With that story and more, it's Antonio Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonio Gonzalez. Leaders of the National Congress of American Indians Youth Commission opened up the State of Indian Nations with a Youth Commission speech Tuesday in Washington, D.C. NCAI Youth Commission co-president Caleb Dash called on tribes to work together to tackle the many issues they face, from violence against women, Indian child welfare, to water rights.
Our young people, our elders, our mothers, and our fathers are all facing the same issues. And I believe the only way to solve these issues is through unity.
The youth speech was made before NCAI President Fawn Sharp took the stage to deliver the State of Indian Nations address. She called on tribal leaders to show up, saying 80 years ago, when NCAI was founded, there was no seat at the table for tribes, but they forged ahead.
Today, after nearly 80 years on the front lines of policymaking, standing side by side with our partners, we don't just have a seat at the table, we have influence and we have representation all across the federal government, all across the United States, and around the world.
Sharp touched on some of the accomplishments in the last year, from securing advanced appropriations for the Indian Health Service to the reauthorization and expansion of tribal provisions in the Violence Against Women Act. She also laid out a number of priorities for the year, including advocating for food policy, tax issues, and land and water rights. Tribal leaders from across the country attended the event, which was held in person for the first time since 2020 due to COVID-19. The Tulalip Tribes and the Public Benefit Corporation Pallet recently held a ribbon-cutting and blessing ceremony for a new village of temporary shelters on the tribe's reservation in the state of Washington. Jill Freitas has more.
The temporary village includes 25 insulated shelters. Each have a bed, heating unit, and lockable door. The village will provide services to residents, including access to the tribe's recovery program, new medical-assisted treatment center, and mental health support. There's also a recovery center that includes showers, laundry, and more. The project is a collaboration between the Tulalip Tribes and Pallet. Rochelle Lubbers is the Chief Administrative Officer for the Tulalip Tribes.
The project was approved by our Board of Directors in October of 2022, and 126 days later, we did a ribbon cutting, so it's been a fast and furious project.
Lubber says the tribe teamed up with Pallet to help end unsheltered homelessness among tribal citizens.
We found that approximately half of the people in the tent communities were tribal members, and the other half being either natives from other tribes or non-natives. And so we have a strategy to provide supportive care at this time to our tribal members and do referral systems for people who are on the reservation and are not tribal members. And our outreach teams work with this population, but Pallet is specifically identified as a solution for tribal members at this time.
Amy King is the CEO of Pallet and started the Public Benefit Corporation with her husband 7 years ago. She says they were excited to partner with the Tulalip Tribes.
I have a number of friends, Native friends and colleagues that I've walked alongside for many years. And so this is feels like a nice coming home almost of an exciting opportunity for us to be partners.
This is Pallet's 100th build and one of only a few of Pallet's projects on tribal land. The tribes in Pallet say homelessness is more common among Native people due to intergenerational factors like overcrowding and lack of housing. And they say while Native Americans account for approximately 1.5% of North America's population, they make up for more than 10% of the homeless population nationally. I'm Jill Freitas.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Heart-related deaths were up in 2020, the first year of the pandemic. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
A new study finds cardiovascular-related deaths increased during the first year of the pandemic. American Heart Association data finds there were more than 920,000 heart-related deaths in 2020, the highest number since 2003. Health officials say part of the issue was that people having heart attacks or strokes were less likely to come to the hospital because of concerns over COVID. Dr. Brian Raw is chair of the cardiology department at the Billings Clinic. He says coming to a hospital during a heart event is an issue in Montana, pandemic or not, given the rural nature of the state.
So it's specifically more important for patients in Montana to realize they're having symptoms. If they think they're having a heart attack, to go to the nearest emergency room as soon as possible.
Ross says studies have shown that many Montanans don't even call 911 when they're having a heart attack. He says travel to the nearest hospital can sometimes double the amount of time from symptom to treatment in the state. Raw notes that time is of the essence when treating heart issues.
One of the biggest things about long-term survival is how much heart muscle damage you have after a heart attack. So we would certainly improve your risk of surviving a heart attack, but we would improve the amount of damage that your heart suffered so that you wouldn't have as many long-term problems.
The report also found Black, Native American, and other communities of color are at the highest risk for heart-related deaths. Ra advises people to get a primary care doctor so that they can treat risk factors such as high blood pressure and diabetes. He says a good diet and exercise also are important. For Big Sky Connection, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A far-right coalition has taken control in Israel, and leaders are now targeting the independent judiciary, intending to put it under the control of the executive branch. We now go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Politics in Israel is today's subject. Israel has always been touted as America's most reliable friend in the Middle East, a bastion of democracy in a region dominated by autocracies. Now that picture is fraying as the far-right coalition of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu takes power. Beholden to the bloc called religious Zionism, Netanyahu will be pursuing a far-right agenda on two fronts, further chipping away at the Palestinians' fundamental rights of citizenship and property, and pushing for so-called judicial reform. Let's look more closely at that last issue. Arguing that Israel's Supreme Court is, quote, the most activist court on the planet, Netanyahu is targeting the judiciary in a way that promises an end to Israel's democratic experiment, not to mention dismissing plausible charges against him of corruption that are before the High Court. His agenda would essentially put the Supreme Court at the mercy of the executive branch. While Netanyahu argues that the reforms would mean more balance between the prime minister, the Knesset or parliament, and the courts, in fact, they would remove most checks on Netanyahu's power. This is because a bare majority of the Knesset, 61 out of 120 seats, which Netanyahu's coalition has, would be able to override any Supreme Court decision and thereby legislate whatever the far right wants without fear of judicial oversight. That essential check on the prime minister's power would be eliminated because Netanyahu would be able to appoint justices and judicial watchdogs, appointments that have traditionally been made by independent bodies. Isaac Herzog, Israel's president, a largely ceremonial post, but one that does carry moral weight, issued a grave warning on January 24. He declared, quote, "The democratic foundations of Israel, including the justice system and human rights and freedoms, are sacred, and we must protect them and the values expressed in the Declaration of Independence. The absence of dialogue is tearing us apart from within, and I'm telling you loud and clear, this powder keg is about to explode. This is an emergency." Herzog is conferring with all sides, desperately seeking a pause in submission of legislation to the Knesset. Indeed, it is an emergency. In a biting op-ed in the New York Times, Thomas Friedman quotes Netanyahu's former attorney general, the man who brought charges of fraud and bribery against Netanyahu, as saying, quote, "If there is no independent judiciary, it's over. It's a different system of government. The ruler will have prosecutors of his own, legal counsels of his own, judges of his own. And if these people have personal loyalty to him, there is no supremacy of the law. This is a sinkhole. We'll all be swallowed up by it." This false reform effort amounts to a coup, and about 60% of the Israeli public has come to that conclusion. Massive rallies against the proposed changes have already occurred as the legislation makes its way through the Knesset. This is a big deal. Israel's position as a democracy in the midst of Middle East autocracies will be gravely undermined, and once again, U.S. ties to Israel, already plagued by Israeli repression of the Palestinians over many decades, will be tested. Thomas Friedman asked President Biden for a comment on the coming judicial changes in Israel and got this response. "The genius of American democracy and Israeli democracy is that they are both built on strong institutions, on checks and balances, on an independent judiciary," said Biden. "Building consensus for fundamental changes is really important to ensure that the people buy into them so they can be sustained," end quote. Very diplomatic intervention, but hardly a stirring cry for resistance. Makes me wonder if Israel would still be invited had Biden's summit for democracy occurred today. The answer is probably of course, since no U.S. administration has gone beyond verbal chastisement of Israel for violations of human rights or any undemocratic processes. As of today, the Israeli opposition is fighting an uphill battle as the ruling coalition is determined to steamroller the judicial legislation through parliament. The Labour Party leader expressed the opposition's anger, saying, quote, "Dialogue is only possible with a complete freezing of legislation accepted by all parts of the coalition and preserving the red lines of an independent legal system in Israel. Hundreds of thousands of Israelis didn't take to the streets to end up as a stamp of kosher certification for the far right's principles." The global context for Netanyahu's Israel is the rise of illiberal democracies elsewhere. in Erdogan's Turkey and Orban's Hungary, for example, and in Bolsonaro's Brazil and Trump's America. These regimes with democratic facades that hide assaults on courts, the press, and free elections reflect aggrandizing political power at the expense of civil liberties, independent institutions, and civil society. That is what Israelis who are taking to the streets are really fighting for. They should have not only our personal support, but the support of liberals and progressives in Congress. Thanks for listening. I'm Mel Gertov for The Global Citizen.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, February 21st, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote productions team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Antonia Gonzalez, and Eric Tegedoff. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
And you are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm your host, Althea Billings, today. We are speaking with Allison Moore, a community organizer and volunteer director of the Portland Psychedelic Society. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. So your organization has an event coming up next month that I want us to get into in a moment. But before we get there, tell me about the Portland Psychedelic Society. What's it all about?
Yeah.